We have a little different venue this morning. We have like a split sermon, and we're going to hear from the Carlsons today. And I believe the young Carlson is up first. Andrew, where is he at? Is he here or is he in Nebraska? Okay. You're on, Andrew.
Split sermon today, the Carlsons. And so my children, they're all awake. It's not nap time yet. I believe I was just referenced as the young Carlson for the first time in many years. So we will take that and make sure they heard all that. So title of today's split sermon, Another Hole in the Belt. Another Hole in the Belt. So what I'm going to use here is the belt, like a belt anyone would use. And if you give me permission here, hopefully I'll land this plane at the end and it'll make sense. But a long week, so I can't guarantee you it will at the end, but I'll take a nod of the head if I do. So another hole in the belt. As we meander through this life, we tend to put a few holes in our belt. So kind of a belt, right? If you buy a belt, especially a man, I think women's is the same. But there's four or five belts that kind of, for the different sizes or the pants that you might wear, or obviously as we expand or diminish, as the case may be, you might use the different holes along that belt. As you move through life, during the fat times, so to speak, a few more towards that far end. So if you start, how do you say, during the fat times of life when things are good and the belt, you might punch a hole that's a little bit closer to the far end of that. And then in the skinny times, when things get skinny, you kind of punch a hole closer to the belt, right? Things get a little bit tighter and you got to go punch a hole in the closer to the buckle, so to speak, to get you through and actually keep your britches up. I guess if I understand it right, Corey had to buy a second belt. So I think that's to the further end, but we'll talk about that later. But the idea is life takes you through these kind of iterations. There's times that you have to punch a hole in your belt close to your buckle, sometimes to the far end. Personally, I will say this both for the metaphor's sake for this sermon. Yes. And also in real life. Yes, I have done both. I have punched a hole, much to my wife's chagrin. I did it with a screwdriver and a hammer, but to this day, I'm still wearing the same belt I've probably had for 12 years. And I think it's got the original five holes is now 8 or 9 different holes that life has taken me through. The bigger ones due to Teresa's cooking and the ones closer to the buckle, usually due to my business decisions. So we've been through a lot, but the key is to be willing to do both in life. The belt or life that you bought 10 years ago, 20 years ago, is not always going to fit. So the life you had, it's in a lot of this, I would use it as a, when you get married, that person you married 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago, is not the same person that you're going to be married to right now. That belt is going to change and you're going to have to flex with it. You have to punch a hole in it in different places. Learn to enjoy both. Learn from both. Learn, right? If you're having to punch one further to the end, maybe you're thinking, hey, maybe it's time for me to get in shape, whether that is physically in your belt or spiritually in terms of your prayer life or your Bible life. And if you're getting a little skinny, maybe there's a lesson in there. Maybe there's a lesson being taught to you, and learn from both of those. Be willing to move. Don't be static with the belt of life. Non-hole punchers, which is probably the only time you'll ever hear this sentence said, but non-hole punchers are miserable people, and we all know them. Miserable people are people that refuse to punch a hole in their belt. They have that belt. Everybody else better make sure that they fit within the constraints of that belt. They will not punch another hole in that belt. They're not going to go through the thin times or the skinny times with you. And they won't go through the fat times with you and enjoy that. They are literally non-hole punchers. And every non-hole puncher I've met, to a person, is a miserable individual. This life or belt no longer fits me, they seem to say. So out you go, or out it goes. So really what you'll see, I mean, in today's vernacular, midlife crises, really what's a midlife crisis other than excuse? A midlife crisis is someone throwing away their belt and getting a new one. They're not willing to flex, whether that's in a marriage or with children or jobs. They're not willing to flex. They're not willing to punch another hole in their belt and take control. So in order to keep that belt, these miserable people, to keep that belt, they refuse to grow or to shrink. And there's times in life to grow, right? We should always be growing, but there's times in life to grow. There's also time to know and read the winds and shrink. And people that are non-hole punchers refuse to do both. The key is to keep punching holes until the belt finally gives out. Keep punching holes until the belt finally gives out. The events of life should not, and dare I say, cannot define you. So the events that you go through, those that are thrust upon you, those that you oftentimes, I mentioned this, we put ourselves through and believe they're thrust upon us, but those events should not and cannot define you. What defines you as a Christian is how you respond to those events. There's nothing, and I don't know if people have done this, it's been a long time and you don't see it much anymore, but an old bus or a trolley system, if anyone's ever been on it, there's that string. So, you know, if you get into like a high density area like New York, it's changed now with subways, but there used to be a string that would hang over the top with a bell on it. And you'd flick that string when your stop was the next stop. That let the driver know, hey, I get off at this next stop, and he would stop. If no one clicked that string or that bell, he would keep pushing through so that everyone was more efficient. They could get to where they were going quick. Nothing worse than the person when something happens in their life. There's nothing worse than a person who pulls the string on the bus and hops off. It may not even be their stop, but you see it again and again. Something happens, whether it's health, whether it's relationships, whether it's something in the church. They literally reach up, pull the string in that bus. They will not punch another hole. They pull the string and they hop off at that moment. I know people that have hopped off the bus in 1997. I know people that have hopped off the bus in 2005. I know people that have hopped off the bus in 2019, but they chose at the moment that an event came at them to pull the string, ring the bell, and step off the bus of life because they no longer choose to have that flexibility to react. The built-in excuse of a bad event to quit punching holes in your belt is an affront to God who created you and the people around you. It's an affront to God who created you, right? Not to be a timid soul, but it is. Humans actually, quietly, we love excuses, right? We genuinely do. We love to self-handicap and say, that's why I couldn't get this. I mean, right now there's entire industries built around your childhood. You would think for a country that's the wealthiest ever in the history of mankind, and 330 million of us, every single individual must have had a horrible childhood and everyone was not emotionally cared for. We love excuses. Why? Gives us an excuse when we fail, makes us look like a hero when we overcome. When really, if you go back a mere 50, 70, maybe 100 years, what we build as excuses would literally be scoffed at as even events of life or even a situation. We love it because it allows us to have a reason out for why we didn't succeed. Or if we just keep going the way we should go, where we now the world calls it heroes, right? Everybody's a hero. If you're a nurse during COVID and you got paid to do your job, you're a hero. You're a fireman and you do your job, you're a hero. We've diluted that word down. Your issues that you go through in life, you'll hear this, is not beyond the pale. It's probably square in the middle of the bell curve. So everyone's like, I'm at the bell curve. My guess, your issues, like many, is square in the middle of the bell curve of all the issues people deal with. The reason it seems like it's beyond the pale is because it's your issue and you have to remove yourself from that. Life is a messy game, right? Those, it comes with age, especially those, right? The older you get, the more life is a messy game. There's nothing clean about life, right? It is a battle every single day. There are no hedges. So in the financial world or agricultural world, there's a hedge. So a hedge is the idea that if you can buy these things that are called options, right? Or futures in the world I live in. And it's called a hedge. So if prices go down, it's a piece of paper, basically. It's a hedge. And you can actually offset your losses for growing a crop by this hedge, this piece of paper, because you monetize it. So if the price goes below this, it's now worth something. That piece of paper is worth something. So it's called a hedge to protect yourself, right? No different than a hedge in a yard is a boundary. It's a boundary that you can set into like an agricultural business so that your losses are no more than X or to mitigate the risk. The funny thing is there are no hedges in life. There are no hedges in life. On a long enough timeline, their survival rate for everybody drops to zero. So you can spend all your money, buy all the paper, but on a long enough timeline, the survival rate for each and every individual, you included, runs to zero. It's how you manage the countdown to zero. So if you can come to grips with the fact there is no hedge, you can't stop the mean mistress that is time, how do you manage the countdown to zero? Because there's no hedge in between. I believe the phrase that is one of the best to do this, take this from the military, is the Marines. The Marines, three simple words that they teach the Marines: recognize, adapt, overcome. Recognize, adapt, overcome. It is, I believe, a phrase that beautifully blends both the physical, right, and the mental. To recognize something, you have to be aware. You have to be observing enough to understand what's going on. But you recognize, you adapt, and you overcome. That is life. It's nothing more than being a Marine, so to speak, in your own life. As an example of this, I'm going to tell you a story here. It's a story of an individual, a 29-year-old individual, a true story, named Stephen Billings. So 29-year-old Stephen Billings, he lived in Omaha, Nebraska, and he was on business in Salt Lake City. So a pretty good spell of a trip, right, to Salt Lake City. He lived in Omaha, and he worked for Ford. He worked for the Ford Motor Corporation. He got into a wreck. This is about a couple years ago. He got into a bus. They were at a corporate event. He was there, and they got into a bus wreck, you know, one of those large ones that carries, oh, I think it was like 40, 50 people in it. Bus got into a wreck going 84 miles an hour, one of those corporate buses going 84 miles per hour, tipped over, went down a ravine. He had burns all over his body, all over the entirety of Stephen Billings' body were burns. When he came to, so it knocked him out, came to, but when he said he came to, there was so many debris in the air, he couldn't see the sun. So this has happened in the daylight there in Salt Lake City. He couldn't see the sun. They had fallen into a creek. So the way it had happened is in there, they had fallen down into a creek. And then the process of coming to and the human reaction to not die and not drown, he swam over, bluntly, the dead bodies of many people who were on the bus with friends and coworkers. He literally swam over their bodies in the creek to try to scramble up the side of that creek. This is an amazing story. He then hitchhiked to a train station. He had burns all over his body that literally locked in to live. He hitchhiked to a train station. He bought an Amtrak ticket to get back to Omaha to his wife and his one child. He made it to Omaha on the 8th, so a day and a half later. He made it on a train to Omaha on August 8th and finally got to a doctor. His doctor did not believe him. His face and his hands were so burnt. How he ever got to the train, I do not know. So bad he was not recognized by his own doctor. This is a man who endured a wreck, a swim over the bodies of his coworkers, somehow managed to hitchhike to a train station, and through the day and night rode that to get to where he wanted to get. The mind had locked in that he had a goal to accomplish. He wanted to get home to his wife and his child. Stephen woke up on August 9th, I'm not exaggerating here, and went to work. He went to work. His bosses did not believe him. They literally thought he was having obviously they could see the physical impairments that he had. They couldn't believe that he was there. They didn't understand. Obviously, they knew that the wreck had taken place. They were still trying to find bodies. This was one that they could not find, and they couldn't believe it. In their bewilderment, they put him into a car. They put him into a car to take him to a hospital, because both for the physical and then also the mental aspects, that they thought he had fallen off of his tree, so to speak. And yet it was not over. Stephen's car on the way to that hospital was involved in another accident. Everyone was on adrenaline and amped up. They were in another accident, by which that car got hit by a truck going 63 miles an hour from the side. The impact was so great, the bandages that were on his face from his burnt face were literally knocked off from the impact. He was sitting in that car, and the impact of that crash literally knocked the bandages off of his face. In the days that followed from that back-to-back incident, so within 3 days, what had happened to him that followed, the stress upon his body caused all of his hair to fall out. His hair literally fell out, and he had neither the strength to eat or drink, and because of the burns, he had a fever of 102 to 103 degrees. It's an amazing story, right? The will to live, the will to recognize, adapt, overcome. So why do I tell this story? I tell this story in order to place your issues and problems into context. Always when you come against your issues or your problems or what's your impediments, always put them into the context of a larger setting. Somebody usually has it worse than you, and understand that. The empathy that you have for Stephen should be a light back against the issues that you have. But I will also tell you, the story I told you about Stephen Billings is misplaced. Your empathy for him is misplaced. Four, it's actually not true. Stephen Billings never existed, but Stephen Billings' real name was Tsutomu Yamaguchi. The car wreck were two atomic bombs. The cities were Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Mitsubishi was his employer, not Ford. The train ride, the burns, the return to work, all true for Tsutomu Yamaguchi. The sickness, the lost hair, every bit of that true. He's one of the only ones they know. He was there in both Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He was in business when the first bomb dropped. He somehow got to a train. It didn't, blown his eardrums out, all the burns. He'd gotten to a train to get to Nagasaki. And then 3 days later, when it was bombed, he was present sitting in the office with his bosses who could not believe, because you got to remember the time and the place. They knew something had happened by papers, but they had no idea. You know, no one at that point, we take it for granted what an atomic bomb was or the fact something could happen like that and the utter destruction. The man lived through two atomic bombings. One, I believe he was 2 miles away from the center of it. And one, he was a mile and a half away from where it actually detonated. Here's the part of the story that I think really matters. He lived to 92. So when I told you Stephen Billings was 29, actually, Tsutomu Yamaguchi was 29 when that happened. He's a 29-year-old man with a wife and a child. He lived to 92 years old. So whatever problem we may come up against, or when we're ready to tap out and it's too hard and our issues are beyond the pale and others usually just don't understand, stop for a second and think about this man. He lived to 92. He continued to work for them. He had two more daughters. There was an interview with him. He had two more daughters. He refused to let these events of his life define who he was. He would not pull the string. He was not going to ring the bell in life because some misfortune had come his way. He was going to stay on the bus of life, and he was going to find out how to punch another hole in his belt. Now, I know most of you, I don't think anybody has come close to living through the situation that he's lived through. But yet, he went on. So this happened to him, right? The bombing of the U.S. and Japan. He went on to become a translator for the U.S. Oh, he had to wear bandages for 10 years over his entire body. So his children didn't recognize him for about 10 years because he had bandages. Went to work, went back to Mitsubishi. And short of the time when he had the radiation sickness, and he went to work every day. How did he do that? He punched a hole in his belt every morning. So we usually have, what, three events a year that are really major. What we could even, I don't even know if it, in America, we could say we have three events a year, we have to punch a hole. We usually can stay within the range of the holes that are already on our belt. But if you think about what he went through, the physical pain that he went through, he had to wake up every single day and punch a new hole in his belt. I'm guessing in the skinny years, and his holes are pretty tight to the belt buckle, right? If you think about it, in the skinny years of his life, right after that happened, I'm guessing those holes are real tight to the belt buckle, almost trying to make sure he got that hole punch or that screwdriver just to the edge of it to keep his britches up. He had to get pretty tight to his belt buckle. 63 years, if you do the math, 63 years of waking up every day and putting on his belt after what he went through. Put yourself in perspective. Recognize, adapt, and overcome. I a little play on words here, but I wonder somehow, you know, someday if we could find this out, if you translated the name Tsutomu, I wonder if it wouldn't come out in our language as Job. Now, different circumstances, but think about what Job went through. Physical conditions, the loss of everything. Job could have tapped out. He could have refused to punch another hole in his belt, but he took his lesson from God. He recognized it, he adapted, and he overcame. What I'd ask you to is go to Romans 5, verse 3. And not only that we also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. Now, hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us. Perseverance leads to character, right? Leads to hope. If you can't persevere, I mean, if you just think of that as a formula or a recipe, the way that's brought in, if you can't persevere, it would appear that if you have a tribulation and you can't persevere, it appears you can't get over the bridge of character. And if you can't get to character, you can't get to hope. So if you're feeling hopeless, maybe you have to re-engineer that formula. And maybe what it is at the front end of that, the hopelessness is not thrust upon you, but you didn't follow the math of life right. Go back. Are you persevering through the tribulations? Are you thankful for them? Are you thankful that it forcing you to maybe lose a little weight, be a little skinny, tighten your belt? Or in the good times, are you using those fat times to understand, hey, this may not always go on. The Lord has been good to me. And a gratitude, and show gratitude for that. Go to Hebrews 10, verse 36. Hebrews 10, verse 36. Hebrews 10, verse 36. Just so you know, Willie told me I had to shut the light off in my room when I give these, because it looks like I have a halo over my head, and I am too old to read my Bible in the dark. So if you see me squinting here, blame Willie, not myself. I apologize. But Hebrews 10, verse 36. There you'll find, for you have need of endurance, after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry. Now the just shall live by faith. But if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. And I love this verse 39. But we are not of those who draw back to the perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul. I think it's pretty explicit about pulling the rope on the bus, right? Pulling the rope on the bus is in the terms here in Hebrews 10. It's the, we aren't called, but we are not of those who draw back. Don't draw back after the events of life. They don't define you. How you respond to them defines you. Recognize those issues, adapt to those issues, and overcome. I think the Bible is very explicit there about not pulling the rope on the bus. Really, what's pulling the rope on the bus? What's another way or definition of pulling the rope on the bus? I dare say another way of saying that would be self-pity. What does the Bible say on self-pity? I looked, went through, obviously, I did it from both a physical Bible, trying to search online through Bible Gateway, every possible way to make sure I don't make a statement that's online, but the Bible doesn't really speak of self-pity. It doesn't have a lot of thoughts on self-pity. But in my kind of looking for self-pity, I kind of came upon the kind of a clue that kind of fell into my lap. Usually the word self, I couldn't find anywhere in the Bible that the use of the word self was used outside of the realm of self-examination. To examine your heart, to examine your ways, to examine your soul, you don't see the use of the word self or reference to self outside of the realm of self-examination. Think about self-pity, self, you know, what you want. Ahab, take Ahab, laid in bed sulking over the land he could not buy, literally one of the wealthiest men probably right then that lived. And is he framed positively by the Bible for laying in bed in self-pity? No. And I've went through everything I could. The Bible does not speak. It doesn't even recognize self-pity as a thing. And then outside of self-examination, it doesn't even recognize self other than finding the flaws in your one to bring out. The moment you have a thought of a self at all, there's a possibility at that point of putting the self first, wanting to be the center, right? So when you allow the thoughts of self, as our society has, and to even foment that you're a self, there's a possibility of putting that self first. Wanting to be the center, right? If you have a self, then you usually, we want to be the center. And really what is wanting to be the center in that self? It's wanting to be a God, right? We want to be a God of this, of our little world or whatever, because we put ourselves in the center of it. Who else displayed those traits? Who else thought of self, then kind of a self-pitying, and then want to put themselves in the center of it, the individual you find is Satan. It's exactly the characteristic that took Satan to try to overthrow God. It's the thought of self. That's what he ran into. So when these thoughts appear, check your britches. So when these thoughts of self and things are hard and this is about me and you don't understand, and this is beyond the pale, when you start to think about yourself at all, take these thoughts, check your britches. Make sure you didn't miss a loop when you were putting your belt on. So I, notorious for this, right? Stay up late or get in late, then you put your belt on in the morning and, you know, one side of your britches is kind of hanging down. So I've done this many times. I miss a loop. You miss a loop on your britches and with your belt. But so if you start to get these feelings of self and self-pity and inability to overcome, check your spiritual belt. Check your britches. Make sure you got your belt through your humility loop. Make sure you got it through your prayer loop. Make sure you got it through your Bible reading loop. And make sure you got it through the think of others and gratitude loop. Because you miss any of those, what tends to happen is your britches, your spiritual britches, just won't stay up. And usually when our britches don't stay up, right, as humans, we'll think it's somebody else has done this to me or I'm in a situation. Check how you put your belt on. Maybe you're a little groggy. Maybe you're a little tired. Maybe you didn't get your belt on the way you thought through every single loop. If you would, go to Job chapter 40, verse 7. Job 40, verse 7. I'm going to do this out for the King James Version because I think I've probably shown this before. I'm a sucker for the language of the King James. I think there's ways that it captures, there's a beauty or a poetry that isn't necessarily present in the New King James. But if you go to Job 40, verse 7, it says, "Gird up thy loins now like a man." So this is obviously the Lord speaking to Job. "I will demand of thee and declare thou unto me." So he's saying, basically, gird up your loins and I'm going to ask you some questions. Now, what is gird up thy loins, right? Basically, it says lose the self-pity. Gird up the loins. Girding, what's a girding? What? A girding, back in the day, so if you, with the time this is spoken about, what's to gird up your loins? It's to take the long robe, so they would wear these long robes. The relation to this is a girdle, right? You know, you don't hear that much anymore, but we usually know what that is, a girdle. That's where it comes from. To gird up your loins was to take your long robes, so these long robes within below you, and you tuck them into your girdle. Basically, you were getting ready for war. And God was saying, gird up your loins, get ready. I'm going to ask you some questions. You're going to answer me like a man, is what he says. So what is the girdle in today's vernacular? Closest I could come up to was a belt, right? So these guys would go out to war. That's where it comes from in this example with Job. But before they went to war, you'd pull your robe, tuck them into your girdle, or what we would call a belt. Cinch down your belt so that you were ready to go, that your robes weren't tripping you, right? You pull it up and back so that your swords were everything that you had. That's to gird up your loins. What is a girdle in today's, for men especially? It's a belt. So when bad things happen, tuck in your shirt, pull up your britches, grab your belt, loop it through, and punch a new hole.